You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Welcome to The Dice Men Cometh, which is Australia's number one radio show and podcast all about tabletop games, dice games, card games, all of those things.
I think you'll find it is number one in the Southern Hemisphere. Thank you very much. Half the damn world and we are number one. We don't ask us where we are in the whole world, but the Southern Hemisphere, smash it.
Well, speaking of being number one, I was lucky enough to not have my children with me on Saturday night.
You lucky, lucky man.
Either was Trent. Some of us will know Trent as a former dice man and my brother-in-law and his wife. And the third of the Gutierrez sisters, I've got one as my partner, Trent's got one as his partner, and Angie, the third one, brought her partner, and all six of us went to a lovely Japanese restaurant.
Right.
And started eating.
Like that is what one does at a Japanese restaurant.
And then we started eating some more because it was this beautiful little, you know, bitsa-bitsa, you order one little thing and a yakitori roll and a this and a that. And we just kept going and going and going and sort of washing it down with some Japanese beers and what have you, and kept going and going. And we'd been there for a couple of hours when this lovely waitress sort of came up to the table and said, you know, can I get you anything else? And we said, yes, we'll have some more of this and more of that. And she goes, I'm so impressed at how much food this table can eat. And I don't know whether we're meant to feel good or bad about that.
I don't believe you are. I mean, it's good for them. You know, if they're a good business, you're giving them money, so well done.
Correct. So anyway, we ate lots of food. That made us really, really happy for a little while. We washed it down with some beers and then finished it off with some dessert. But that's not got nothing to do with tabletop games, which is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Leon is going to kickstart this with what we have all been playing and what he has been playing most recently on the colour-matched massive gaming table that you just own.
Mm-hmm.
We're then going to talk about a game that we tried to talk about last week and ran out of time in Lisboa. Leon wants to talk about this particular table and lead this discussion into ultimate man caves. Is that right?
Yes, I do like a cave and I do like a man.
And on that probably should take us all the way to the end of the episode, I reckon.
Yeah.
So tonight is episode 232 of The Dice Men Cometh. Mm-hmm. I am Garth.
I'm Mark.
Over there is Mark. Over there is Leon.
Hello.
And Mark, can you press that button, start a song, and then we'll come back.
One, two, three, four.
Oh, there you go. A little Tassie link with the Foo Fighters with the Ballad of the Beaconsfield Miners here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh for episode 232.
Exactly right. The time you went to the dentist the second time.
232.
Correct.
Okay. Proudly sponsored by our friends at Area 52, Tasmania's leading pop culture retailer at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart.
Mm-hmm. Leon.
Hello.
What have we been playing this week? I can't remember.
Well, before we talk about this, Mark needs to just go away for a second. I need to tell you a secret, so you need to come a little bit closer.
Okay.
I need to come. I just need to tell you something. I've been meaning to tell you this for a while, but
Hail Hydra. I'm Hail Hydra too. Yes, I'm awesome.
Well, what's going on over there?
Nothing at all. We are not doing anything. We are not doing any sort of hailing of Hydra. But that is a lie, because yes, that's what we're doing. Look at the people. We are hailing Hydra. So, this is a game which I had not known of as its existence until I saw a Dice Tower review of it and went, that looks brilliant. How have I not heard of this in any stage or form?
Yes.
Which is very, very odd. It's because it's by a company called Spin Master. Who are they? They are pretty much nobody. Basically, they are a Canadian kind of knockoff Hasbro that do random kids games that no one really cares about.
Hi, Spin Master.
No, well, we don't want to insult them, but I mean, as you said before, they don't want to hype this game up that much, so the only thing we do know of theirs is that they are the ones who did the escape room in the box that had the cool chrono decoder with the little keys and whatnot.
I did a little search. Didn't they always also do 5-Minute Dungeon or have some involvement in that as well?
I don't know.
I wouldn't think so.
Unless it's the designer, maybe.
I think the art might be the same dude, but I don't think it's the same company.
Well, according to BGG, it might be same as Santorini as well, which is a bit odd. Maybe one of their additions. But anyway, we get bogged down in detail.
Yes, that is
not
well,
us.
If they are the company that made all those games, well done. They're one of the best in the business. But we will soon see. Anyway, so Hail Hydra is a 5-8 player social deception, deduction, and destruction game.
Oh, it's a 3D.
Yes, there's two extra Ds more than the one normal D.
That's good.
Yeah.
Better than Piranha 3DD. That was disappointing.
Yeah.
Capital D.
Most of it was, especially the 3D bits fun. So anyway, it's social deduction games. Games that we're fans of, but we haven't talked about much of late because there hasn't been much development in that. A few years ago, we had Secret Hitler. That was the last big one.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, the end of last year, earlier this year, I was a massive and still am a fan of Werewords, which is the newest one that I've gone on about every bloody week. And now there's Hail Hydra, which is the first kind of bigger... So I say bigger, bigger in the fact that I've played it and I've, spoilers, liked it. But, yeah, as I said, it's a small company and it hasn't really been anywhere. It just kind of came out of the blue, which is weird because it looks really, really good. The components in it are spectacular. You open the box and as you open it up, it lifts out and folds out... Everyone would know this from the lovely unboxing video that I did.
That was an incredible unboxing video, Leon. Some of your finest directorial work.
I know. I think in the description it said the best unboxing video in history. I don't know who put that up.
You've mastered the shaky cam, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I thought, why not?
Correct.
To have that nice amateur feel. So anyway, so you open this box, and then straight away you've got all the components there. There's not heaps of them, but you are met with two rule books.
What? Ooh, two rule books?
And the reason there's two rule books is because one of them is for the first game rules. And this is a step-by-step showing you exactly how you play through the first game of this. So it takes a few of the rules out, gives you majority of it, and you play through it step-by-step. You get to one bit and it says, right, now play out the round, you know the rules. Once that's finished, we'll show you what to do next and so on. That is an absolute brilliant thing. I've said for years when it comes to rule books, I want very early on the rule in the book how an order of kind of play works, and this quite literally walks you through it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a tutorial.
Yeah.
That's simple. It's a nice way. I mean, this is not a complicated game, it needs to be said.
No.
But to be walked through particularly the unique abilities of various heroes, be them good or bad, just makes that dipping into the Hail Hydra world a little bit easier.
And then the next rules is obviously the full rules when you go and play the game with all the rules in it as well as a few other bibs and bobs. It is a little bit sparse, sadly. There's only a few pages of this, and even the... Because once you play the first game rules, you'll probably never look at that again, but the other one doesn't have much to it. However, I did discover on the YouTubes, which is a thing that I believe all the kids are using these days, Mark.
I'm not a kid.
There are tutorial videos for every single character in this game.
What?
Wow.
Every single good guy and bad guy, there is a 1-minute video by a guy from, I believe, I'm guessing, Spin Masters, he also did a tutorial on how to play this game and explains how all the characters work. That's great. Should have been in the book. Mm. No reason why the words he's saying could not have been in the book, because there was a few questions straight away where he just went, well, how does that work with this? And everyone just kind of went, there should be a simple answer to that.
Could have been a strategy guide, perhaps. Yeah. But then again, maybe they didn't want to clog up the box with too many words, because it is a lovely visual feast. The character art is lovely, particularly for fans of
Marvel.
Hydra. Yes. And Marvel.
I'm still confused. What is this game? We know it's social deduction. We know it's all those Ds, but what are you doing?
So what you're doing is you're handing out these little discs to people, and on the flip side of them, they will show you if you're a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent or you are a Hydra spy. Mm-hmm. So there's a few evil people in each game, but they have always generally outgunned by the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And what you're going to be doing is going out on missions, because you're going to try and save New York City. It's under attack from evil S.H.I.E.L.D. villains.
I think I saw a movie about that.
Yes. It was called The Justice League, I think.
I think it might be right.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah. Anywho, so that's what you're going to be doing. So you're going to be sending out your characters on a mission to take down these bad guys. All the while you know that some of your friends may not be on the level. So the characters you get to pick from are most of your big hitters in the Marvel Universe. Your Captain Americas, your Iron Mans, your Hulks, the whatever else, Spider-Man, stuff like
Spider-Gwen.
That.
Spider-Gwen. I was Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, Spider-Gwen's also
Daredevil.
In there. Yes,
he's
Daredevil.
In there.
Deadpool.
Deadpool's not in there at all.
You sure?
He's not in there.
Batman?
No.
Expansion, maybe.
I was going to say, there's a reason for that, because if you want to sell your expansion, who's the character you put on the front?
That's right, yeah.
Exactly, because people are silly. Anyway, so this is what you're going to be doing. So everyone gets their own characters, and then there'll be a villain out in the middle. So the way you defeat these villains is everyone's going to have a hand of cards. And in this hand is very similar. This game is actually very similar to Secret Hitler, in the sense that in your hand, what you will have is cards that give you a positive attack and a negative attack. And you're going to be playing between one to three of them face down, and everyone's going to do this. And then everyone's going to go collect those cards, shuffle them up, and reveal them, and see if you have killed the villain or just injured him. And if they only just injure them, they smack the city around.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Step back a minute.
What?
Secret Hitler.
Yeah?
This game is nothing like Secret Hitler.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
You're going yeah or nine.
But that's like almost every social deduction. I would think the game to me that it is most similar to, and I haven't played, I know there is a version, but the it's Battlestar Galactica, really, with those, we're all putting in cards, the game puts in a couple of cards to throw you out, and then you're adding up and seeing if you pass.
Well, depending on what villain you go against. Some villains have that special ability to add in cards to kind of throw you
off. Okay, yes.
But it's not.
Because I think there is I can't remember the name of it, like a way, 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 way shortened down Battlestar Galactica.
Is it Dark Moon?
That could be it.
Formerly BSG Express.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
but that's what you're doing. Everyone's going to be putting in one to three of these cards. Now, they range, I think, from about minus four attack.
Minus five to minus two, and then the pluses are plus one to plus four.
Yeah.
So the negative cards are stronger, but there are definitely always less Hydra people in the game.
Except when we play last week.
Yes. No, they just happened to seem like there was more because some of us were really, really good.
I'm sure
at
we'll
it.
Get to that.
Yes, anyway. Yeah, yeah. So as
Can't
I mentioned
wait
before,
we talk about that bit.
But also the characters, they all have their own special abilities, which you can use once per game, which is very good. And they're all very thematic to what they are. So for the Hulk, for instance, when he comes out, you can use his ability to damage the villain instantly, but you damage the city as well because he's the Hulk.
Of course.
And there's a few other abilities that I'll get to in a second, because the next phase after you beat a villain is that you're going to have a phase where you vote people out. However, it's not one of those games where you vote people out, they sit on the side for an hour while everyone else finishes the game. Because what they will do is they will be out of this mission, but they will still be active in a sense that they can give cards to other people on the table. But everyone kind of talks about who they think the Hydra agents could be, and you get everybody to vote. And the thing with this voting is that if everybody abstains by just putting their finger up in the air instead of pointing, nobody gets voted out. However, you do know there's bad people in there, but you can abstain if you want to. And if there's a tie, nobody gets voted out.
That's right. Because unlike in games like BSG,
yes,
where there is a chance that everyone is good, you know, this is always going to have bad people, presumably. I don't even know the numbers, but there's always less Hydra, but there's always going to be a couple.
And
yes,
that voting mechanism for me, that was the second big tick for this game. I mean, firstly, it's Marvel and the art is spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you get eliminated for a very short period of time, but then you're back in again. Someone like me who, let's just say, gets perhaps targeted in these games because...
And rightly, Hydra person.
Clearly I look dodgy or something.
Possibly.
You know, you get to come and back in. You get a chance to get a reprieve because the mission goes really bad while you're not in there, and people then go, oh, I guess it wasn't Hydra after all. And you get to come back in. So I really, really like that.
Yes, indeed. And also with that voting mechanic, as the game progresses and you fight even more difficult villains, you actually vote out more people.
Mm.
By the time you get to Red Skull, who's the final villain of this game, is always the person you fight last, you're voting out three people in your party. So half the party, you're kind of gone. But as I said, if you're voted out, you still, every round before anything happens, you can give several of your cards to other people on the table. So if you think they're good, give them stuff. If you think there's bad guys on there, you can test them. They say, oh, I've got a horrible hand. Okay, well, I'll give you good cards, see if you use them. So there's always things that can be, you can try and work out who these people are.
And when you said how many villains, what's the range? Three was the minimum, wasn't it? But then it goes up to...
In the first, when you play through the first rules game, you have three. When you play through a normal game, I think you always have five.
Okay.
So a couple of, there's a level one, there's a couple of level twos, a three, and then you go up against Red Skull.
Okay.
But there's one thing you can do. If you are a dirty, dirty Hydra spy, you can... Hail Hydra by declaring that you are, of course, one of the baddies. And you can do that at any point during the game. And when you do that, if you're still in a mission or haven't been voted out, you will damage the city instantly because there's a little sneak attack. And then from then on, you can do things like you can play cards like everybody else if you're still in a mission, but you play them face up so they know what they're dealing with. As well as, instead of, if you're knocked out of a mission, you can actually steal cards from other people, as well as you can damage the city extra every time, even if you're knocked out of a mission.
Yeah, this is, again, yeah. I think a similarity to BSG, and that I really liked, is you've got that option of, well, I can try and hide away, or if you feel like the heat is on, oh, Hydra, yeah. You can, you know, you jump out before you're caught and cause extra damage, and you're not knocked out of the game again. You still have a way to interact. A lot of fun with that.
Yeah, and as I said before with the characters, now that I've talked about the voting, like She-Hulk is in it, and she's a lawyer in the game. So in that, she can make somebody not vote, and she can make them close their eyes and not speak. So she can basically say, objection, and that person gets nothing. Whereas like Captain America, he can make himself have two votes because he's the captain. Yeah. And then there's lots of different bad guys in this game. You'll see them in all of them in the video that I put up. But there's things like the Green Goblin, who reaches into his bag of tricks, and everybody has to take some negative cards from the discard and put it into their hand, because that's what the Green Goblin does. Yes. He's a trickster. Then you get someone like Taskmaster, who from the comics, if anybody knows, what he does is that if he sees any sort of attack by anybody, he can then mimic it straight away. So his ability is, if you damage him, he then damages the city that much, unless he's been completely knocked out.
Mm. I remember that one.
Yes, which was an interesting strategy because I thought, well, we're not going to beat him one round, so let's all get rid of our bad cards. And then everyone went, no, that's a horrible idea.
It was a silly strategy.
It was a very good idea, just nobody followed it. And it was a whole kind of cluster.
Yes.
But yes, now played this game with, I think, nearly all the numbers. I played it with 5, 6, 7. I haven't played it with a full 8 yet. Well, I played it with 5, 6, and 7. And all the different levels have kind of worked out in all different kind of ways. Because I thought it was really going to be hard for the good guys to win.
Sure.
Especially the last game that we played, there was 3 Hydra to only 4 Shield Agents.
Wow. That's
tough. And in the final mission, all 3 Hydra were on the mission. We knocked out 2 good people.
That sounds like something you'd do.
I know. And then we all revealed ourselves, the Hail Hydra, and the good guys, with only 2 of them against 3 Hydra, they still won.
Wowzers.
Which
that's pretty amazing.
Basically the luck of the horrible cards that we had. I had a whole fistful of negative cards, and my 2 fellow Hydra agents, my lovely wife and our friend Bo, they only had positive cards left, so they had to put in some bloody positive cards. And yeah.
And that is another, for me, like the, what are we up to? The fourth big tick is how the cards work, because you might be as evil as you like, but because you're getting basically 5 or 6 cards.
Well, you're getting 6 to refill to when 6 you're, when you're the first player.
Every time you're the first player, you get rid of your whole hand and get 6 brand spanking new cards.
That's right, and then you've got to make them last all the way around the ring. Now, you can play up to 3, I think was the maximum.
Yep.
Up to 3 cards, but then obviously you're only going to be able to play probably 1 at most for the other rounds. And as happened, I know it happened to me, happened to you, Leon. Mm-hmm. Don't know about Garth because he was just a filthy Hydra. But you get the situation where I don't have any good cards at all. And you're stuck. And you might be as good as Captain America, but you're going to have to lay some smackdown on the city with a bad card.
Another good thing is that you don't have to, but you can kind of telegraph what you're playing. You can say these are good cards.
That is all you can say.
Or these are bad cards.
That's something I should have pointed out.
And that's all you can say, but at least you can say, you know, I'm playing 1 good card and 1 bad card.
Yeah, so you can lie through your teeth about pretty much everything.
Yeah.
But when it comes through the cards, you can't flat out say, I'm playing a -4 card. All you can say is these are good and these are bad. You then don't have to clarify what you believe to be good or bad.
Yeah. No.
And you can't, for the life of me, you can't go saying, oh, some of these are slightly worse than others. No, everybody listening and everybody I've played with, no, that's too much information. You're not allowed to do that. Yeah, so, well, I said, we've played it with all different numbers, and I played it on my big old table, which was interesting, apart from the fact when we had to reach into the middle, which was more difficult.
Did you have to go, Hail Hydra?
Yeah, they heard me eventually. Once the echo got to them, they heard me eventually. But yeah, but the components, like I said, the components are exactly what this needed. The box is one of those things that has exact place for everything and nothing else more, which is what you want. And it wasn't that expensive as well. I got it shipped from the States because, as I said, I'd never heard of it until I saw a Tom Vassell video and went, yeah, mine, because I love Social Deduction. I love me Marvel. And then, yeah, and it's rocked up. And
I agree. I think it's all kinds of goodness. The only thing is the board's pretty flimsy. It's a bit of paper.
Pretty much.
Every other component in this game is really, really top-notch. Yeah. And the art... I hate to draw on the Mark train, but the art is really, really good.
Well, the weird thing is, it is a good-sized box. I mean, it's the size of the rule book.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they couldn't have had a nice little cardboard board, because there's space in the box for it.
I guess probably cost,
yeah. I reckon and the fact you could almost get it, like, laminated or just put onto a decent bit of cardboard yourself.
Yeah. Or just printed out something. Yeah. Right. And also, since it's Marvel, and Marvel have a bajillion characters, infinitely expandable.
Oh, yes.
So you want to hope. There are actually a few promo characters that I only found out about today when I was doing my research. There is Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, and Agent Coulson. You can have as good guys. And then there's Superior Octopus, which is a Spider-Man cross with Dr. Octopus as a villain you can have.
Would Hawkeye's ability be he doesn't do anything?
How dare you? He is one of the best characters in the Marvel Universe. How dare you? No. But, yes, absolutely two thumbs up. It is one of my games of the year so far, I would think. And it's staying in my collection for many, many years to come. Something that not many people know about, but more people should. Hail Hydra.
Did we mention the Incredible Hulk is in this game?
Well, there you go. That was Beck with Gamma Ray. Here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Hulk joke, Gamma Ray, Leon, Gamma, Marvel Comics.
Gamma Bomb, but it's close enough. Well done.
Hey, anyway, Leon, you talked a little bit about the... Your new table.
Yes.
The ultimate gaming table.
It is indeed the table of ultimate gaming. So, everybody that's listened to this show, if you're like us, which of course you are, hello to all our loving family, you want a game table. We all want gaming tables.
I want a gaming table.
We've all wanted one for years. We've watched our tabletops. We've watched our dice towers. We've seen those things, like those lovely geek chic tables and stuff like that, and gone, that's what I want. I want one of them in pride and place in my man cave, lady cave. Cave in general.
Person cave.
Person cave. Or just your home. Now, Geek Chic has gone out of business last year, but it used to be, I looked at it one day and went, yeah, definitely want one of those. Then I had a look at the old price and went, ooh, for the standard everyday kind of meh, about $3,000.
Ooh.
And then shipping to Australia, I mean... Don't get us started on anything shipping to Australia.
Except Hail Hydra, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of, you kind of put that in your mind. You kind of think, oh, maybe one day I'll get to it and whatever else, but not that big a deal. Then up on Kickstarter about a year ago, the Table of Ultimate Gaming came up, and it is an amazing looking gaming table that shipped internationally everywhere. And I went, that's kind of cool. Then I saw the price and went, that can't be right.
Yeah.
And it is indeed right, because what I got was I got the biggest version of this table possible, which is the 4-foot by 6-foot, which is mainly for more your war games and type of that, as opposed to your normal 3-foot by 5-foot, which is for board games.
I could sleep on that table pretty much.
Yeah, you could. It's basically a queen-size bed-sized table. And I measured up where we would put it, and I said to the wife, I said, Sarah, you know how I love you? This table looks cool, and we could fit it right there. And she's just like... Can we use it as a normal table? And I went, look, you put the lovely slats on the top and it just becomes a lovely dining table. And she went, all right. And I went, all right, indeed. So we ordered it. It was supposed to be here in about January, February, but it's Kickstarter. So of course it didn't.
Exactly.
Didn't in the slightest.
And it absolutely obliterated Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It made, I don't even know, but hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I think it was about $500,000.
Yeah.
It was something like that by the end of it. And you can see if you look on it, there's all these different decals you can get on it, because I've got these cool side plates you can get on it everywhere that they're all magnetized that you can snap on designs and stuff.
Ooh.
And obviously you can buy them from the store themselves. They've got some amazing stuff. Since then they've done some specific Warhammer ones that are crazy looking. Or you could probably, if you've got a good laser cutter, you could probably do them yourself. And there's various different features, like it comes with cup holders that have like a little dice rolling mat on them as well, and you can have it as various different heights as well. So if you want a really big high kind of lip on the table to kind of put your arms on and rest and whatnot, and that's good for, you could cover the table up, like I said, with the slats, so you could leave a board game or a session of D&D set up, cover it with the slats, come back to it a week later, it's exactly the same.
Oh, nice.
Although, I have it set like that, but I'm going to have to change it, sadly, because you know, things, math kind of came in, evolved, because we can't actually reach our hands into the center of the table because it's so big and it's so high. And also, if I was to invite my 5-foot mother around for dinner, she'd be eating like with her hands above her head and it just wouldn't. So I'm going to have to lower the table to make it a bit easier to actually play.
No, you're going to have to invite your mother around and take some photos first.
Yeah, and then just give your mother some stilts. But it's so big that if we invited people around, just like 4 people to play a normal everyday game, we'd only be using half the table. We'd get people to sit on 2 on an end and then 1 on each side and just using that because it's so damn big. But it's something I've always wanted, and there are a few things that bit issues with it. Like, you could take those awesome slats off and you could stick them, saw them in the table itself, which is awesome, but I can't do that out of 3 of my 4 of my sides because I don't have enough room around it to get them in, because you need like 4 foot of leeway to get them in, and who has a space that big?
Well, I reckon you could probably fit it in your TV room as long as you just removed all the lounges and the TV.
Yeah, I could fit it in my lounge room really well if I removed, as I said, every single bit of furniture in my lounge room.
So there you go. Where's your commitment?
And I can't actually fit this in my rumpus / person cave because I've got a pool table in there. So, but the thing is, even if I took the pool table out, we did the measurements, it wouldn't make any difference down there. Yeah. There's not that much more room, mainly because of all the shelves and around the walls filled with comic books and board games. So what I'm saying is this is the worst first world gig problem.
This is really
you've
poor Leon,
ever heard. Oh, not poor me at all. I have an amazing life. Don't worry about that. And I'll be the first to tell you. But this is something I've always wanted, and it is now in my house and pride and place in the middle.
Yeah, and it turned up, and you managed to get some mates around and do the construction because it all came flat pack, very, very IKEA style.
Took us about 5 hours, couple of Allen keys. You know, no hassle whatsoever. Yeah. So, instructions were easy to follow.
On the box, did it say how much it weighed? Because I hate to imagine the weight of this thing.
It weighs in the vicinity of 100 to 150 kilos.
Wow.
It's not... Because people said, well, you could just move the table to one side, put one of the slats in, move it back, put the other slat in. No. No, I couldn't, because it's not
that's too heavy for that.
It is an absolute monster. Like I said, it's the size of a queen-size bed. Wow. So everyone now, look at your queen-size bed. Yeah, it's that big. It's humongous.
Wow.
So Leon's got seemingly a person house.
I do.
Not a person cave.
I'm lucky to have a nerd wife, so I essentially do have a... We have a person nerd house.
Now...
And a big fans of it.
I don't...
But,
however,
yeah,
I am on the final stages of construction of a person cave because it was a garage that got destroyed in some Tasmanian weather event in May where the foundation cracked and it started to be unsafe. So anyway, thankfully, through to having home insurance, I'm now going to have a resurrected garage / person cave now. Mm. And I've been walking through, and my room's about 3 metres by 6 metres, you know, about the size of a single garage, about that. And I'm thinking, how am I going to make this work? Joe wants it done as quickly as possible, Joe, my other half. Yes. She just wants me out of the house. She wants the games out of the house. I'm already sleeping in there, just me, a sleeping bag on the concrete floor, because she's pretty confident it'll be watertight soon.
Yep.
So what am I going to put in mine, apart from... a smaller version of a table that Leon's got.
I was going to say, you won't be having Leon's table in there, that's for sure. But,
no.
Yeah, I mean, let's think about our good friend, you mentioned him earlier, Trent.
Mm.
Now, he's got a game cave, I'm going to call it.
Sure.
We'll take the genders away. He's got a game cave, really fantastic shelves, purpose-built shelves on 3... or maybe even 4 sides. I think there is some on the 4th side where the window is. And, you know, purpose-made for CDs, DVDs, board games, comics, graphic novels, all that sort of stuff. Great big TV on the wall where he plays his Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, and he's got his Xbox things with all his 1980s games. That's sort of right. Emulated onto it.
And let's call them... medium-sized gaming table in the middle, or it is one of those ones that gets bigger and smaller.
Four to 6 people kind of thing.
Yeah. An actual proper normal-sized table,
yeah.
Which I kind of somewhat miss. But anyway.
Then, you know, Garth, you've been ridiculing him for the fact that he's got a reclining lounge chair in there as well. Now, it does take up a bit of space, but...
He needs it for his electric guitar, because he can't be standing up jamming
the whole time. Yeah, well, then, that's right, he's got his sound system and his guitar.
It's too cluttered.
That sounds like... the sort of game cave that I would love to have. Although, I think that I've got something better in my... Well, it's an office.
Mm-hmm.
And Leon's got one. Garth, you haven't got one yet, I don't think.
No.
A Kallax.
Oh, no, I don't have
the
a Kallax
IKEA
yet.
Shelf. I've got a 4x4. Leon's got a 5x5. Kallax IKEA shelf. It is perfect for games. It is just like it. Someone's gone, let's build the ultimate gaming shelf. I love it.
Well, so much so that it's a kind of a thing that's been known for a long time that people that make whiskey, they design it to be drank with Coca-Cola because it's the biggest mixer in the world, and that's what most people are going to do it with. A lot of people started to design the size of their board game based off Kallax shelves from IKEA because it is the most popular board game shelf in the world, and for good reason. They are sturdy and they are perfect size for board games.
Yeah, I love mine, absolutely. I mean, it's full already and I need another one.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that maybe when I buy a house down the track, I might get a couple more of them.
Well, I think I'm going to go down the Trent path and get some inbuilt, purposely made shelving rather than going for the IKEA.
Well, what else are you going to put in there? Well, so you're going to have a game table.
Got to have the game table.
You're going to have some shelves.
Got to have some shelves. And I'm thinking I'm going to start with the TV at one end again.
Yep.
But then I'm going to have shelves surrounding that. So I'm going to put a good lot of shelves at one end. Got the TV on the wall with all the... My son is just not shutting up about a PlayStation 4, so I might get him one of those.
As well, he shouldn't. Spider-Man, get him on Spider-Man.
Yeah. little lounge at the back, not an ugly recliner.
like a movie-watching lounge?
Yeah, movie-watching lounge I think is going to work. But I have been toying with the idea of rather than having a TV, getting a projector screen.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, because that was my thought is, you know, you want a spot for your screen, for your TV potentially. But the thing is, TVs are getting bigger and cheaper all the time. Like, I'm actually using my previous TV as a computer monitor, you know, and it's like 42 inch or something. I've been playing The Witcher. Oh, my goodness, it's so good. I'm so behind the times, I know, but I'm just loving it.
Just wait till you hear about Pong.
But, yeah, that my thought was, well, you don't want to make a particular spot for your TV if you've got shelves around it when you can't, and then you can't move it, because if all of a sudden you get the latest Samsung PULED TV and it comes in a really big size, you don't want to be able to not fit it in.
I know.
If it's super cheap.
I think I might have to go a projector.
What about the old classic? What about a dartboard?
Well, dartboard's a good idea. I think I might have one of those as well, but maybe I might just... to take it on the outside, because I can play darts outside, surely.
Well, where does the fridge go?
Oh, that's
good. The drinks fridge.
Yeah, I might get one of those lounges where the fridge is stored in the body of the lounge. I think that could be a really, really strong idea.
Well, for me, I know when I eventually get a game cave, it has to have a good refrigeration for all the home brew, of course, because it'll also be the home brew storage room.
Mm-hmm.
But you know the thing, I was thinking about this when Leon said, oh, let's talk about our game caves. I want a pinball machine. not just any pinball machine. I've mentioned this before.
You have.
I want the KISS pinball machine or the other one that I'd consider. The original Jurassic Park one was pretty good, but there's a really good Star Trek The Next Generation pinball machine too. I just love pinball, and it's just so old school. Hey, let's just stand here and play some pinball for 15, 20 minutes.
Yep.
You could do that instead of, you know, having a filler game or something while people are waiting. Oh, it's such fun.
I think you might have to have a person house as well.
Yeah, it's getting a bit big.
But one thing I should mention before, when we were talking about the table of Ultimate Gaming, they're back on Kickstarter now, which is the trend, as everybody has, is that they finally shipped, getting much, much positivity. Let's go up on Kickstarter again.
Yep.
But what they've got up on Kickstarter now is they've got the tables, but they've also got table toppers. So just basically the top bit that you can just flat out put onto a table. And it's the exact same type of stuff. You've got your neoprene mats and you've got your cup holders and whatever else. You can also get these tables in coffee table sizes. You can get them in bar table sizes, so like even higher, which is kind of cool. The one issue is now that they're not shipping out of the USA.
Which
kind of sucks. However, they've put a reason for that, and I think it's completely reasonable. They have said that they're waiting for more feedback and to see how everything's gone with all their international orders, because they're still kind of trickling out before they go whole Hogan going, yep, our experience with that international shipper was perfect. We will now offer it in this country.
Sure.
And so on and so forth. And also, to be perfectly honest, that first campaign, with those tables being that cheap, I reckon they were not making much money at all.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, there has been a bit of a trend of Kickstarters where the shipping and in some cases the add-ons have sent people broke because they don't, you know, they're trying to get cheap shipping to get people on board, and it ends up they just don't realize how much international shipping costs. We know that here with even just games, you know.
But it's
so
also
many
the trend of we're going to have all these stretch goals which add more weight to a game.
Yeah. And since they've got this new topper out, which is not something that obviously this table they've been working on for years, but not necessarily the topper, they want to put it in just the US where they're going to ship it out from their own warehouse. And also, like I said, maybe make a bit of money off it, which good for them because they're a business and a good business that have been very positive. They should do it. But as you mentioned before, Mark, I actually got an email from Devil Pig Games the other day. They're the same company that did Carnage! But they're mostly known for their, what's that game called? The War one. There's a Cthulhu one, Heroes of Normandy. Send an email because I've got something with them, which is the card game, I think, for Heroes of Normandy. And they sent an email to everybody basically saying, it's really, really late. We've had no update. And the reason because is our company is essentially, we've got a big chunk of money from someone else to put out some new stuff because we've kind of overindulged and our company is pretty much in very, very, in dire straits because of what you said, Mark, because of the fact that they put on the extra, you know, shipping and your upgrades and all this other kind of stuff. And they just kind of, when this game was on Kickstarter, there was another game on Kickstarter. They had like three games on Kickstarter in the span of 6 months. And they did successfully. They all funded. But then logistics came into it and everything kind of went. So a reputable company is now kind of completely in the can, to be perfectly honest.
I think Shadows Over Normandy, is that it?
That's the one. Shadows Over Normandy is the Cthulhu version.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Heroes of Normandy is the one that's kind of like your newer version of a Memoir 44, like, you know, updated version of that. So they were a very profitable and cool company, but it's a bit sour now and they might not be around much longer.
Well, there was, I can't remember which campaign it was where the dude lost his, ended up having to sell his house to finish off the thing. I can't remember which one.
That's not ideal. But either way, you know, we have cool person caves.
We do. Oh, well, I'm so close. I'm so close. I'm about to go on a holiday in 2 weeks' time, and I want my cave ready so I can have my game stuck in there. But
it'll definitely be done by the time you come back.
I hope so. So that was Leon gloating about the size of his table.
Yeah, it's big.
Mark and I wanting a table of that size.
Dreaming of a
Garth getting closer game to the person cave and Mark talking about The Witcher. So, Mark, you want to throw us to a song and then we'll come back and talk about a very heavy game.
Hello, everyone. Mark here with a brief history lesson about patronage. Did you know that Cesare Borgia patronised Leonardo da Vinci? We all know where that ended up. That game he made about civilization building got bastardised into Small World, a game of cuddly races cuddling up against each other in cuddly mountain caves. And Chrétien de Troyes, or Troyes as you might know him, was patronised by Marie of France. Now, I used to call her French Mary when I knew her back in the 12th century, but again, another board game that was produced with patronage. How can you support patronage these days? Well, we've got this web-based thingy on the internet called Patreon. And by giving money to the Dice Men there, you allow us to create board gaming genius by way of media content, by way of your internet radio waves into your ears. And there's more, but we need more money to do it. If you support us on Patreon, you'll get paid back 1,000 times over in the content that we create. Or just feel good that you're helping three poor little people in Tasmania from having a hobby. We appreciate everything you do. We love you all. Thank you so much for supporting the Dice Men on Patreon. Getting paid back does not include real money. Terms and conditions apply.
That was Flume with Holding On Edge Radio 99.3 FM this week with the Dice Men Cometh. We are going to talk about a heavy game that could go on my lovely heavy table.
Yes, it would survive on your heavy table.
Yes,
I reckon.
And it'd be one of the tables you could actually fit every bit on.
Yes.
Which, yep. And so we're going to talk about a game we've talked about before, and that is Lisboa, which we played again recently. It's been about a year or so.
Oh, probably closer to 2 years, because we played it at PAX 2016.
Yes,
is that
two
right?
PAXes ago.
With the man himself.
With Ian O'Toole, who was the graphic illustrator and artist on this game, and he and Vital, the designer, have now done several games together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we did get this to the tables, Sunday, a week and a half ago, because as part of the Kanga judging panel, we needed to play that game again. It had been a little while, and it's up for a couple of the Kanga awards. So, Sunday night, New Sydney, sit around a table, capping it out at four players, the three of us and good friend of the show, Carl, who is also a fan of the slightly heavier game variety.
Mm-hmm.
We set up Lisboa and just delved straight in. Now, for those listeners who weren't listeners way back when, we did virtually a full episode on Lisboa. So go back in the podcast stream, probably November 2016, there'd be an episode completely dedicated to it. And Mark, you can probably do some research and tell us the number. So look, Lisboa is basically a game where each player is playing rival nobles, but all helping to rebuild the city of Lisboa after a massive earthquake in 1755 that led to a tsunami and also fires.
Yeah, they're three bad things.
Yeah.
And having all three would be like awful bad.
Exactly. And it's really, you are starting with nothing. You are starting, admittedly, with an incredibly beautiful board that has a very beautiful layout of Lisboa. But there's no shops there.
No.
There's no buildings there. There's no nothing there because it's all been rubbled. The only thing that is, in fact, there is rubble.
Mm.
Now, we're not going to go into the this is how you play this game because it would take a full episode to do that.
And we have done it.
Needless to say, it is a Vital Lacerda game.
And if people want to listen back to episode 143, we not only talk through the rules of the game, but in that episode, we had the interview that Trent did with Vital Lacerda himself. Or if you want to listen to a huge unedited interview, search for From Lisboa with Love on our website and you can hear the whole interview that Trent did. So you've got a huge array of more Lisboa listening you can do.
Fantastic. So Vital Lacerda, who is Portuguese, so this is a bit of a famous incident in Portuguese history and certainly something that he draws a lot of inspiration from. Vital Lacerda, famous, I guess, for the gallerist Vinhos Kanban or Kanban, CO2, the upcoming escape plan, which I've backed on Kickstarter and seems to be a little bit lighter than what is normally been done, but typically a very, very heavy, complex game. The thing I wanted to talk about with Lisboa is this complexity level and its entrance to newer players. Because we've all played a couple of Vital games here. Primarily for me, the Gallerist is the one that stands out as my favourite, personally. But the thing that I found really, really interesting about Lisboa is even though three of us had played the game before, Carl had not, we'd all watched videos about how to play it again.
Yeah.
The game comes with four really, really expert player aids that are not just a double-sided bit of card. They're a whole player booklet that tells you the ins and outs of each turn.
Mm-hmm.
But this game is damn complicated.
Oh, yeah.
There are steps you need to do before you can do the steps to make the steps to place a building.
Mm.
There are steps you need to take on your own player board to be able to get your own ship together before you be able to get goods and sell them. But in order to sell them, you've got to be able to produce them. And because you're starting in an earthquake zone, no one produces anything. So before you'd be able to get to produce something to sell the goods, which is the only real way to get money, you need to build up an industry, which means building a building. But in order to do that, you've got to remove the rubble, which means you've got to be able to afford to do the rubble, and you've got to speak to the right nobles to do all of those things.
And to build the building, you need to have an architect to build the building. You need to have plans for to build the building and blah, blah.
Yeah. Now, I cast my mind back to the very first time I played and taught The Gallerist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was able to find on BGG a really good This Is How You Teach the Gallerist document written by Vitaly Serda.
Yes.
He'd just come off the back of a whole bunch of cons. He'd taught the game about a squillion times and he'd got it down to a really fine art. And with the gallerist, it was quite simply, you're running rival art galleries, you do this to do this to do this, and it makes really thematic sense. Now, with Lisboa, the challenge is you're all ultimately trying to win and be the most prestigious by getting wigs, but there's not a huge amount of direction in what you should do as the optimal strategy.
Well, there's so many. There are so many ways to get wigs, aren't there?
Yeah, you've got to build your shops, but the shops aren't going to generate anything unless you build the public buildings, because the public buildings are the ones that the king's going to be there and open, and he's going to then draw, you know, admittedly, traffic through the shops. You've got to be able to produce the goods, but you've got to put them on the ships that you've still got to build. You've also got to curry favour with these nobles, because they might be able to do stuff that's going to help you out. But gee willikers, it's a hard, hard, hard slog.
Now, I want to throw in here and say, this game is amazing.
Yes.
It's amazing looking. And just like The Gallerist, one of the things that the man who I love so much and worship almost everything he puts his hands on, Ian O'Toole, a West Australian, we'll claim him as an honorary dice man. He does an amazing job of incorporating into the board design, and I know it's him, you know, with input from Vital, but it's really, you know, he does so much work to make the board tell a story of how to play the game. In The Gallerist, like, because you don't know what you're doing when you start, until you start that explanation, it doesn't jump out and hit you. But once you know how the game plays and then you look at the board, it's like, oh, the board tells you all this information you need to know. And is, you know, it's almost like the board is a player reference card. Now, he's done that again in Lisboa, but I feel like there's just so much going on that while it acts as sort of a ready reckoner for a lot of things, there's just no, I don't know if coherent is the right word, but there's no sort of path that you follow, because it's like there are 50 paths and they're all crisscrossing 50 different times.
Yeah, it's just not as intuitive, I guess. No,
that's the word.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's not necessarily a bad thing if you go into this knowing this game is going to be heavy. This game is going to require work and is going to require a whole bunch of referencing not only the player aid but the full rule book. But we were all comparing it to previous Vital games that we've played and just going, it's a bit more of a slog, this
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And that's, again, not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a bit different to the previous titles of Vital that we've played.
Yeah, it's heavier, but it doesn't necessarily, even for people that like a heavier game, I don't think it's heavier in a positive way.
Mm.
We talked about the fact that nearly every action you do in this game seems like there is at least one extra bit to it that doesn't need to be there. Seems like one extra little bit of complication that you're like, all right, so I've got to go here, which gives me this, which gives me this. Oh, but I forgot that I've got to do this to do this to this. There's literally like one extra step in nearly everything you do, which kind of frustrating and just like, ah, I want to be able to do these things, but you forget stuff because there's so much going on. So even though it's heavy, it's just a, just, it's scooch too heavy.
Well, it's just, for me, it lacks the narrative arc that I love in The Gallerist. It's like, I'm a gallery owner, but so I can make some money by having people come into my gallery and having famous paintings in there. I can also make some money by selling paintings, and I can make more money if I help non-famous artists become famous. Those things make sense to me as a gallery owner of these. This is how I'm going to make some money. Whereas this, you know, because you're nobles trying to curry favour with the people who are rebuilding and assisting in the rebuilding, but it's not like the king says, all right, I want you to build number one street first, and then number two street, then number three street, then we'll also open some shops, then we'll get the tourists coming. Like, it's, there's no map of how it's going to look, and so it doesn't matter what order all those things happen as long as some of all of them happen.
Mm, that's right, and that's the thing. Is it fun? Was it fun on that, admittedly, second play for us, but really it's kind of like the first play because we didn't have Ian there directing us how to play a game. And certainly for friend Carl, it was a first time and one of those experiences where you just sit there basically locked in your own head with your brain throbbing, going, all I want to do is put down a shop that makes silk, but how do I do that?
Yeah. And there is a really good little guide in that amazing player handbook that says, if you need money, these are the ways you can make money. If you need goods, these are the ways. You know, like it gives you these little pointers. But again, there's not a, I'm going to do A, then B, then C, then D. It's sort of like, well, I could start with E and then do 12 and then do X minus 1 and I still might end up winning the game.
Yeah, or you'll end up in a hole.
Yeah.
And go, okay, well, I'm going to spend the next couple of turns trying to figure out a way to get a couple of dollars because I need it to do a thing.
But as something we discussed before, the fact that is it fun? When it comes to like, because we like a heavier game, but we also like a lighter game as well. But there are some people that are flat out, no, I just like heavy, heavy, heavy. Is it any game for them at all about fun? Does fun even come into it? Are they literally just like, no, I like the strategy and I get satisfaction from putting my strategy or my tactics correctly and like and actual winning the game. So like it's a puzzle, but I don't think fun is ever a part of that decision.
Well, that's really interesting. I think the puzzle is all about, have I grokked it? Have I got my mechanics down? For this game is more complicated than any coin game I've played.
Yeah.
But I think we need to draw a line in the sand because we've run out of time, really.
Yeah,
absolutely. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more gaming. We're off to play another classic.
Oh, Power Grid.
Power Grid.
Oh, I hope nobody sabotages those power plants.
Everyone say goodbye. I was waiting for it. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.